I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Happy Friday, I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
We talked about Barbette this week.
We did.
Barbette, who I love, but I feel like if I traveled back in time and met Barbette, Barbette would not like me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I'm fastidious enough for Barbette.
Sure.
He was all about impeccability, which I don't I don't own that trait.
I was going to say it was too much gum chewing.
Possibly. Too much of anything.
Yeah.
I think Barbette would find modern culture and the way people dress very casually utterly horrifying. But
sure, sure.
That's just my theory. Although, in that same 1969 article that we talked about, one of the things that comes up is the person that connected Stiegmüller to him finally, because Stiegmüller had reached out and gotten no response and ended up going through a professor that knew them or could get them connected. Mm-hmm. And this professor was apparently a very casual dresser, but Barbette was very complimentary of him and compared him to like royalty. And there was this moment of confusion of like, are we all talking about the same thing? Like what's so he obviously had like a magnanimous spirit and was willing to, you know, be kind and didn't just dismiss people. But
sure,
I think I might be too sloppy jalopy for Barbette. The Alpharetta sisters, his first act.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little offhand detail that's sort of, it's simultaneously like really yucky, but also so indicative of the world of vaudeville that was going on at the time,
mm-hmm.
which is that, you know, we mentioned that one of the Alpharetta sisters had died. And the one that remained that was to become his partner in this trapeze and aerial act was the wife of a comedian named Happy Doc Holland, who was a blackface comedian.
Oh, and goodness.
This just kind of gets, you know, mentioned very casually. And it's like that
right.
Because that was totally de rigueur at the time.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to remember how many just weird things were going on in vaudeville that people were perfectly willing to accept. And then there was Barbette, who not everyone
right.
was willing to accept, but some people loved.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about, like female impersonators in vaudeville before. You have selected our Julian Elting episode, as an upcoming Saturday classic, because it pairs so nicely with this one, but like there was a lot of sort of gender impersonation, gender performance.
Yes.
In the world of vaudeville.
Yes.
Obviously, it did not originate with vaudeville. Yeah, it was, but you know, that's, there's a whole history there.
Yeah. I, I find myself so fascinated thinking about how Barbette would fit into the world today and how he might identify and how he might, whether he would be an out gay man. Like, there are other indicators. We mentioned that he clearly had relationships with men. There was one thing that I found and I wasn't able to really substantiate, although it came from, you know, a fairly reliable source, but that he had actually been arrested in England
mm-hmm.
for, the way it was worded sounded pretty benign, like basically being found in an embrace with another man, whatever that may mean.
Sure.
But that as a consequence, he couldn't perform there anymore because he couldn't get performance permits,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I don't know that he cared since he was so happy in Paris, but
right.
Those are the kinds of little things that pop up. But again, there's never any indication that there was a special person in his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Other than possibly Jean Cocteau, and the way that relationship kind of peters out is a little unclear to me as well. Some of this is made extra fuzzy because one of the sources that a lot of people cite is a very well-written historical novel. So,
oh, yeah, that's tricky.
It seems to be very well-researched and it's very well-written, but, like, there are obviously elements that are speculative that I think some people have taken as factual gospel truth.
Yeah,
and that
yeah,
has
yeah.
confused things quite a bit. So I spent a lot of time just trying to, like, eliminate anything that seemed like it may have come from there. Again, not to deride it as a piece of writing, but just it's...
Yeah, that can be really tricky. There's been a couple of times when I have sort of reviewed a historical novel for the show because it was something that, like, was described as being really grounded in, like, as much factual detail as possible.
Yeah.
But, like, the same thing, like, when you're writing a novel, you're making choices about making it a good novel. And so that's not something that I think can work in most of the time as a, like, a source for the show. Also, we talked about this a little bit in our Ruth Benedict, I think, behind the scenes lately, that, like, so often when we're talking about people living at a time when, like, any kind of same-sex behavior was in a lot of places more outlawed than today, because obviously there are places that still illegal.
Criminalize. Yeah,
like, there's so much of what historians are trying to do involves, like, reading between the lines mm-hmm. And kind of, like, eking things out from the margins. And so it can be really tricky. And then aside from that, we've talked before about, like, not wanting to assign people an identity that, like, they didn't have the same cultural access to.
Yeah.
It's a tricky thing.
It is.
So, like, this is yet another person that, to me, like, clearly in the big umbrella of LGBTQ, IA plus history, but, like, specifics that it's okay to have questions about and not know definitively.
Well, and he's one that makes it extra unique because so much of his work and what made him famous was messing with that whole system anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, you think I am a beautiful woman. In fact, I'm a beautiful man. So it's unclear to me exactly how the relationship with Cocteau fizzled out or if he just wanted to come back to the U.S. or what. He does state pretty clearly in that 1969 interview that he was really dismayed about the film and what had happened and how he felt like he had been a little manipulated into being part of something he wasn't comfortable with. So
sure.
That may or may not have been the source of part of
their
fizzling out. One thing that's really, really interesting, right? We talked about how Cocteau had gotten Man Ray to take these portraits of him, which are very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
There is one, at least one, that's in the collection of the Met, but it's not on display. They have it on their website, but it's like they have a note about permissions that, like, it can't even be enlarged from what they show on the website.
And oh, wow.
You can't download it and they can't sell it and that they don't have it viewable at the museum. So you kind of only get little pictures. It got used on a book cover at one point. That is the other thing. There is a source I would love to have, which is a book written by Cocteau about Barbette.
Mm-hmm.
To get it on the secondhand market was a couple hundred bucks.
I was going to say $800.
There are times when I'll be like, yep, and I kind of wanted it, but it was like it was not going to get here in time.
Mm-hmm.
And even the dust jacket for that book, which features a Man Ray photo, is like $50 just for the dust jacket.
Oh, my goodness.
That is an indicator of how cherished this book is.
Yeah.
So did not get my hands on that one, unfortunately. I want to talk a little bit more, because I mentioned I would, about what a jerk J. Brooks Atkinson was in that review.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I literally, at first as I'm reading it, I'm like, he points out that, you know, somebody's reaction was that it was god-awful. But then he is kind of mocking that woman. And I was like, is he actually trying to say, like, no, this is art and she's too ignorant to get it? But then as he goes on and he's like, oh, what are the Europeans going to do if Barbette breaks his neck? And I'm like,
yeah.
I don't like anything about this. This whole thing is gross. And he became very influential in his career. So
yeah,
I hope he learned kindness. It's always a weird one.
Yeah.
Oh, Barbette. You can see some video. It's quite grainy of him. Doing some of his early acts with the circus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Again, that whole Erford whirling sensations using your teeth to support, that is one of the most terrifying acts of any, like,
mm-hmm,
circus or aerialist for me ever. Like, I have one of those things where I just, like, broken teeth weird me out, and the thought of it is not. Mm-mm. No. Yeah. Austin really embraces Barbette. Whether Barbette would agree with that is a matter of debate.
Yeah. And that goes back to, like, my earlier question in the episode of, like, I have no idea what the perception of Austin was when Barbette was alive. But I feel like the Austin vibe now.
Yeah, probably not quite the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is certainly speculation about why he chose to end his life when he did. We don't know. It is all speculative, right? Like,
yeah,
his family very purposely kept that quiet. Like, they didn't want to speak on it. So we don't have any details, which is probably right. And it's certainly in line with their wishes.
Right. Well, and I think also, mental health is complicated.
Yes.
And I think a lot of times when there's this, like, a search to find a reason for something, like, even if there is, in quotation marks, a reason, like, that might be really oversimplified.
Yeah. And I understand the impulse, because people want to make sense of behaviors that don't make sense to them.
Right.
And be like, oh, but there is a cause and effect I can point to, and that makes it more understandable and something that I could avoid in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, it's finding ways to say that scary thing is not ever going to touch you.
Yeah.
So I fully understand it. But in his case, there's not really any information about it. We know his health was not great in the last few years of his life, but that's all we know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I really, really, I want more Barbette. I know there was a play staged about Barbette in the Austin area, I think in 2002. And there were write-ups about it then, and it was very well reviewed at the time, at least locally. And I didn't find anything else about it, though, beyond that. So hopefully, this is a person I would be happy to have a movie made by a really skilled writer and director.
I just looked up this photo that's at the Met on my phone while you were talking, and that is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, Man Ray is already, like, and all of these photos are like that, where he's often in full hair and makeup, but then, you know, he's only partially in, like, the undergarments of a woman. You can clearly see that, like, his chest and his shoulders, he was very petite, but he obviously is very strong. Like, he had to have been for his
work. To do this aerial work,
And, you know, where that part is not yet part of the illusion of womanhood. And it makes just all of these really compelling images. There are some portraits of him in full drag that are so spectacularly gorgeous and glamorous that, like, they're swoon-worthy as art. They're just so beautiful. So if you want to go noodle around on the internet for pretty pictures, that is a perfectly delightful way to spend an hour, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This week we talked about square dancing.
Yep.
So we both learned some square dancing in school. And I will tell you, I was into it. And here's why. At my school, square dancing was one of the things we learned, like, as we moved away from sort of the kindergarten level PE, where we did stuff like playing with a parachute. Or like rolling around on scooters that I'm surprised we didn't all cause ourselves serious injury with. And we moved into a lot more team sports. And I was bad at all team sports. I couldn't throw a ball. I couldn't hit a ball. I couldn't catch a ball. Occasionally, I would have some weird run of luck where I would actually like get the basketball into the basket. And I would be like, maybe I can do it now. Nope. It was a weird fluke. But what I could do was follow instructions. So square dancing was like my preferred gym activity. you don't look like you have that same experience.
Well, I have to confess, you know, I mean, I think I have many times, what a shrew of a child I was, because I did not encounter square dancing in school until I moved in the fourth grade from the Seattle area to the Florida Panhandle.
All right.
And by the time we got to square dancing in PE, I had begun to take ballet lessons and fancied myself a prima ballerina.
Okay.
And I was the biggest snoots patoots, where I was like, I would enjoy square dancing if anyone else in this class could do it. Like, I was that horrible kid that was like, you suck, you suck. None of these people are worthy to be my partner. Like, I literally pitched to the teacher, can I just do it by myself? Because I didn't want to deal with other kids.
I honestly love this story.
What a shrew.
My judgmentalness was slightly different. We did the thing where we were going to do. Actually, I think what we were going to do was the Virginia Reel, which is technically not a square dance because it's done in two rows, not in a square. And so there's that whole thing of like, should this be under the umbrella of square dancing or not? And my partner was a kid, I am sure as an adult, that his home life had other stuff going on that I did not know about.
Of course.
All I knew about him, though, was that he was absent a lot and that he thought this was stupid. And so I was like, I know what's going to happen, which is that he is not going to show up for the PTA meeting where we're supposed to do the square dance. And I'm not going to get to do it. And I'm going to be upset about it. And you know who was right? It was me. And I was very kind of bitter about that. I just this past weekend went on a road trip with my spouse. And as sometimes happened, I kind of just downloaded everything about square dancing to him as we were like making our way toward the highway to go on this trip. And I was surprised to learn that his gym class did not include any square dancing. Like, he is a year younger than me. Which, you know, we were sort of toward the tail end of this square dancing gym class popularity wave. But he's still like close enough to me in age that I would have expected it. And he's also from a really kind of remote rural area. And so the fact that there was no square dancing, kind of, I was like, really? And as we were talking about it, he pointed out that his school's nearest neighbor and their rival in all things athletics was actually a reservation school.
Ah.
And he was like, I wonder if, and this is totally speculative, but he was like, I wonder if those same things about like square dancing kind of being like a tool of oppression kind of influenced that school and then also by extension, like their neighbors. And I was like, totally speculative, but also to me, totally possible.
Right. Grounded in some solid logic.
Yeah. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road trip or waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I also have a quote from S. Foster Damon that I didn't put in the episode that I wanted to read. Okay. Because, like, there were just so many revivals of square dancing, and they just all kept making the point, this is so old. This is like a return to our, quote, Anglo-Saxon heritage. We don't often use the word Anglo-Saxon on the show anymore because it has become this, like synonym for, like, white history and this, like, when we're actually talking about English history that formerly would have been described as Anglo-Saxon, like, at this point, we are more likely to say early English. But we used it in this episode because that's specifically what people were referring to, was this, like, sort of imagined idea of a white pastime and reviving it over and over. So S. Foster Damon wrote, quote, "Then the Second World War swept away our last romantic notions that Europeans were better than Americans. The nation worked together as never before, and again, as in 1651, the spirit of democracy rose from the folk into the ballrooms. Countryside and city were one again." People have put a lot of emotional weight on square dancing.
They have. We have not gotten to the thing I really, really, really want to talk about.
Okay, let's talk about it.
It's hillbilly hair.
Okay.
Because while Western square dancing was something I first did in school, my first exposure to it was that 1950 Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Sure. Yeah.
In which Bugs, after a series of entanglements and whatnot, ends up calling a square dance with these two brothers, the Martins, and through his calling makes them do more and more violent and progressively silly things, which I
love it.
It's a skewering. Again, this was made in 1950. So, like, it is definitely a skewering of this whole idea that square dancing is, like, this noble Americana, as it was kind of being pushed in the public sphere. It also is, you know, pretty unkind to people who live in the country.
Sure.
To rural areas. And it also just kind of skewers this idea of long-term family feuds. But
yeah,
one of my happiest moments ever as a podcaster was when I was doing the podcast Drawn, which is about animation, and I was interviewing Jackson Public, who is one of the creators of the Venture Brothers, and he and I both love Bugs Bunny, and spontaneously we were doing the call from Hillbilly Hair together. Whirl, whirl, twist and twirl, jump around like a flying squirrel. Like, it's the best. It's the absolute best. And so that's what I often think of when I think of square dancing, which I imagine people who were trying to really push it as a part of important American folk culture probably didn't appreciate.
Right. Yeah.
That, yeah, that cartoon has been censored in a variety of ways over the years, sometimes due to gun violence, sometimes due to just violent behavior. But I imagine there are lots of people who have would rather it not exist. But
yeah,
since
yeah.
I Bugs Bunny was my first crush, I will always love it.
I don't remember. I kept putting it in and taking it out and then like adding more description and then taking it out. About sort of the attire that is common in modern Western square dancing, which is like a lot of gingham dresses with petticoats and like Western inspired
petticoat part I'm into.
Yeah. And so like that is like it's pretty much described as like square dancing attire that is like really common specifically in modern Western square dancing. And then in the more traditional square dancing, it's kind of more all over the place, like,
yeah,
in terms of what people wear. it's not our first social dance episode. We also did one on swing dancing, which is also a social dance and also has, you know, some differently nuanced but twists and turns in its history.
Yeah.
I was trying to get a handle on like what exactly modern Western square dancing involved. And I found this one page that was sort of like coming to a square dance. And it, to me, as an outsider, felt a lot more gatekeepy than swing dances I've been to. Because usually when I've gone to a swing dance, there is a beginner swing dance at the beginning of the dance. And then anybody of any ability level is welcome to dance. And if somebody dances with you, you can just say, I'm a beginner. And if that person is a total expert, they are not going to like walk away from you on the floor. They are going to dance with you. And, you know, you'll make mistakes and everyone will laugh in like the spirit of camaraderie with one another, not in like you don't know what you're doing. And this was really more like, if you're a beginner, like, don't show up. Not don't show up, but, like, don't try to dance with more experienced people. You really have to have learned all these calls before you dance. And I was just like, I get the point that instead of just having one partner, there are four couples at this dance.
Yeah.
And if one couple is struggling, that might affect things for the others. But, like, it just felt a lot more gatekeepy than, like, what I sort of expected from something that is inherently a social dance.
I don't think I've ever done a square dance thing as an adult to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the closest we ever got was when Brian and I took a ballroom dance class at one point that my employer was offering. And that did not go well because no one had explained to my husband that we would have to switch partners and he was not enthused about that plan.
Yeah.
He's like, but I want to dance with you, which is very sweet.
Yeah, it is very sweet.
And I was like, uh-oh.
Whoops.
We have to be that couple that's like, we're not dancing with anyone else. And my life repeated, but that time I didn't mean to be the person that was like,
oh no,
I'm not dancing with any of you.
Oh, I love it. I love it. If you are super into modern Western square dancing and like the things that I found that sound gatekeepy or like outliers, feel free to like write it and, you know, let us know what your experience is. It just seemed like a very more like you have to know all these calls before you can join a square. And I was like, okay. How do you learn them without experience?
Right.
So anyway, again, super into it in elementary school. I was so good at following instructions.
I love it.
Unless I thought your instructions were nonsense, at which point I was not doing them. If you want to send us a note, we're at historypodcast@iheartradio.com. We'll be back with a Saturday classic tomorrow and a brand new episode on Monday. I hope everyone has a good weekend. If you like to social dance and you're getting to go social dancing this weekend, I hope you have the best time. If you would rather not do that, I hope no one makes you. We'll be back Monday with a new show. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I used to have so many men. how this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.